Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It is November 9th, 2020, and we will begin on the front page with the article headlined, Memory Lives On, Golf Scramble Held in Honor of Late School Board President. Bathed in unseasonable sunshine and temperatures nudging 75 degrees, it was a great day for a golf scramble at Southside Country Club. But amid the trees, still smoldering with the afterglow of fall color, stood Old Glory at half-mast, a reminder, although none was needed, of a dear and absent friend, club member Todd Garner. The avid golf player, president of the Mount Zion School Board and vice president of Peerless Cleaners, was a good friend to so many, many of the fellow Southside members golfing in his honor on Sunday. Garner's premature death at the age of 57 on October 30th, after contracting COVID-19, had sent shockwaves through both the Decatur and Mount Zion communities. Suddenly, for many, a disease that some critics had played down or tried to minimize became frighteningly real in its capacity to reach out and take someone living a vibrant life whose friendship had brought such joy to others. Well, I would not say we've joked about COVID, but maybe we blew it off. We've all made comments about COVID throughout this year until it hits home, said Nick Tott, Southside general manager and head golf professional. And then, after Todd, you start re-guessing some of the things you've done in the past couple of months and realize you maybe held some events you shouldn't have held. A tragedy like Todd's makes you think. So what better way to remember a stalwart club member and friend than to go play the game he was so passionate about in his memory and to do some good while playing it? Tott said the club normally hosts a Halloween scramble as purely a fun event, but after it got pushed back due to COVID issues, and then came the news of Garner's death, the drive to create a new event was born. The club's response was to restage the scramble on Sunday, renaming it the Todd Garner Memorial Golf Tournament, in honor of Garner and turning it into a fundraiser that packed the club's course with 120 players. It was all handled with staggered starts and appropriate social distancing and masks to accommodate the dozens of players, but also keep them as safe as possible. All the money raised is going to go to Crossing Healthcare in Todd's name for their COVID expenses, said Tott. And we're hoping to raise $10,000 today. Helping the fundraising along was a slew of attractive silent auction prizes, including several rounds of golf at the Olympia Fields Country Club in the Chicago suburbs, along with catered dinners and other goodies. Scramble play started at 7:30 a.m. and lasted until pretty much the last of the daylight on a picture-perfect day. Talking to the players, however, visitors soon got the impression they would be out there in honor of their friend, whatever the weather teed up. I want to be here in memory of Todd. He was a great guy, and this is where he'd be today, said player Doug Nichols. Todd was just an honorable man in every way, a community guy. Been in Decatur pretty much his whole life and just a fantastic person to be around. Nichols said their friendship stretched back 25 years and Garner was the first of his friends who had fallen to the virus. It makes you realize you have to be careful with what you are doing, he added, because it could happen to someone like Todd. Another player, Chad Burmeister, said his absent buddy was sorely missed and had impacted many lives with everything from his sense of customer service in his professional life to the caring he showed for his friends, clients, and the staff who worked for him. Todd Garner will be sorely missed in this community, Burmeister added. And next, pandemic, lack of trust, impact tax vote. Democratic state lawmakers approved a ballot item for a proposed amendment to the state constitution in May 2019 that seemed like a simple populist sell. Should Illinois get rid of an income tax that everyone pays at the same rate in favor of a graduated rate system that would make the wealthy pay more? But on Tuesday, the proposed graduated tax amendment met with resounding defeat, with 55% of voters rejecting it. Unofficial vote totals showed it got a majority in only one of the state's 102 counties, Cook, with 62.5%. In more than a quarter of Illinois' counties, all downstate, 80% of voters rejected the change, even though in most cases, fewer than 1% of taxpayers in those areas would have seen higher taxes under the rates approved by the state legislature. Opposition topped 60% in 88 of the state's 102 counties. A lot happened in Illinois and the country in the 526 days from the vote in Springfield to the vote on Tuesday. And some of those events played a role in the defeat of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker's signature agenda item, which he bankrolled and tried to sell as the fair tax. Pritzker was still in his first year in office when Democrats approved the ballot item. It was a heady time for the new administration, which had a series of legislative successes. In its first session, working with a Democratic supermajority in both chambers of the General Assembly, after a havoc-filled 4 years of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. But Illinois entered Election Day at a different place. Pandemic restrictions began in March, and after a summer easing, are becoming tighter once again amid a surge in COVID-19. Raising voter questions about leadership and upending traditional political campaigns. Voter trust in Illinois government was dealt another blow by federal investigations of Democrats, including one implicating veteran House Speaker Michael Madigan, who also serves as state Democratic chairman. And a well-funded pro-amendment campaign backed by Pritzker's wealth found its goal and its message obscured by an equally well-funded opposition effort, whose chief objective was an easier sell, sowing doubt and confusion among the voters so they would vote no. "We were trying to sell something that was a bit more difficult than they were," said Quentin Fulks, chair of the pro-amendment Vote Yes for Fairness campaign. If there was an overarching theme to the proposal's defeat, it was the trust, or mistrust, factor stoked by opponents, primarily the Coalition to Stop the Proposed Tax Hike, a group backed by $53.75 million in funding from Ken Griffin, the CEO and founder of the Citadel Hedge Fund and Investment Group. After two tax hikes in the last 10 years, with Illinois staring down an $8 billion deficit, millions of voters made clear they didn't trust the Springfield politicians with new taxing powers, said Lance Trover, a veteran political operative who consulted for the anti-amendment group that aired millions of dollars in TV ads. In a state where two of the last five governors, Republican George Ryan and Democrat Rod Blagojevich, were sent to prison for corruption, voter skepticism toward politicians and Springfield has always played a role in state politics. But that existing weariness increased in July when Commonwealth Edison, the state's largest utility, paid a $200 million fine and agreed to cooperate with federal prosecutors after acknowledging it engaged in a nearly decade-long scheme to offer jobs and contracts to allies of Madigan in an effort to gain the Speaker's favor. Madigan has denied any wrongdoing or any knowledge of the scheme. But Madigan, the nation's longest-serving legislative leader who has been Speaker since 1983, except for 2 years in the mid-1990s, has, over the years, become a singular target of state Republicans as the root cause of everything wrong in Illinois. And continuing on the front page, Biden to move quickly on new government. President-elect Joe Biden signaled on Sunday he plans to move quickly to build out his government, focusing first on the raging pandemic that will likely dominate the early days of his administration. Biden named a former Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, and a former Food and Drug Administration Commissioner, David Kessler, as co-chairs of a coronavirus working group set to get started, with other members expected to be announced Monday. Transition team officials said that also this week Biden would launch his agency review teams, the group of transition staffers that have access to key agencies in the current administration to ease the transfer of power. The teams will collect and review information such as budgetary and staffing decisions, pending regulations, and other work in progress from current staff at the departments to help Biden's team prepare to transition. White House officials would not comment on whether they would cooperate with Biden's team on the review. "People want the country to move forward," said Kate Benningfeld, Biden deputy campaign manager, in an interview on NBC's Meet the Press. "And see Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris have the opportunity to do the work to get the virus under control and to get our economy back together." It's unclear for now whether President Donald Trump and his administration will cooperate. He has yet to acknowledge Biden's victory and has pledged to mount legal challenges in several closely contested states that decided the race. Biden advisor Jen Psaki pressed for the Trump-appointed head of the General Services Administration to quickly recognize Biden as the president-elect, which would free up money for the transition and clear the way for Biden's team to begin putting in place the transition process at agencies. America's national security and economic interests depend on the federal government signaling clearly and swiftly that the United States government will respect the will of the American people and engage in a smooth and peaceful transfer of power, Psaki said in a Twitter posting. A GSA official said Sunday that step had not been taken yet. A bipartisan group of administration officials from the Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton administrations on Sunday called on the Trump administration to move forward to immediately begin the post-election transition process. "This was a hard-fought campaign, but history is replete with examples of presidents who emerged from such campaigns to graciously assist their successors, members of the Center for Presidential Transition Advisory Board," said in a statement. The statement was signed by Bush White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolton and Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt, as well as Bill Clinton-era Chief of Staff Thomas Mack McClarty and Obama Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker. Biden aides said the president-elect and transition team had been in touch with Republican lawmakers. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, one of Trump's closest allies, opened a cabinet meeting on Sunday by congratulating Biden, a former vice president and longtime senator. "I have a long and warm personal connection with Joe Biden for nearly 40 years, and I know him as a great friend of the state of Israel," Netanyahu said, I am certain that we will continue work with both of them in order to further strengthen the special alliance between Israel and the U.S. And moving to the local and state page, on COVID, 150 new cases in Macon County. Macon County health officials on Sunday announced 150 more residents have tested positive for COVID-19, and two more residents have died. The Sunday news release said the new cases brought the county's total since the start of the pandemic to 4,478. Of those, 32 people are hospitalized, 1,565 are in isolation, and 2,819 have recovered. The death of a female in her 90s and another in her 80s bring the county's total to 71. Meanwhile, Illinois public health officials reported 10,009 new confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 and 42 additional fatalities, bringing the total number of known infections in Illinois to 487,987 and the statewide death toll to 10,196 since the start of the pandemic. The state on Friday began reporting probable cases as well as those confirmed by testing, but even before that, the daily case count was setting record highs. Governor J.B. Pritzker and some staff members briefly went into isolation late last week after someone at a meeting they attended last Monday tested positive for COVID-19. Both the governor and the staff members subsequently tested negative and were released from quarantine. Under Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines, that is allowed because they had met with the person who became infected 48 hours before the onset of symptoms, and therefore weren't considered close contacts, the governor's office said. Pritzker had twice previously gone into longer periods of isolation after coming in contact with an infected person. State officials on Sunday also said 90,757 new tests had been conducted in the last 24 hours. The 7-day statewide positivity rate is 10.6%. Over 4,000 people are reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 833 patients were in the ICU, and 368 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators, according to public health officials. And next, from the local and state page, Jackson 5 mural demolished. The Jackson 5 mural downtown Gary, Indiana, was painted into existence only a few short years ago, but it quickly became an iconic image in the Steel City, attracting artists, musicians, and urban photo enthusiasts from all over the world. It stood in all its vibrancy on 561 Broadway's brick facade, giving hope to Gary residents for a brighter tomorrow, while honoring the city's past as home to the Jackson Five, including the young king of pop, Michael Jackson. This week, the city raised the 561 Broadway building, one of several in that corridor that's been long deemed unsafe and dangerous to stay standing. City leaders say it's part of a longer-term strategy to eliminate blight and make way for future development. Felix Flex Maldonado, a well-known graffiti artist in the region and East Chicago native, and Omar OMS Marin were behind the painting. Maldonado said he is overwhelmingly saddened to see one of his most, if not the most, prolific pieces of artwork disappear. But, he said, he was blessed to have created it. I am only a vessel of talent guided by God, Maldonado said. Maldonado politely declined an interview Thursday with The Times, saying the mural was made for Gary residents, so that's who should speak on it. I believe you should talk to the ones who took pride in their mural, the ones who found inspiration and hope in their city every time they saw it, the ones who believe they became someone just like the ones on that wall, he said. Talk to the people of Gary, because that was who it was for. Augmented by deep contrasts of black, white, and silver graffiti paint, the portrait of the Jackson Five brothers seemed equally vivid at night as it was during the day. For artists, the four-story painting served as a backdrop for numerous local music videos, movie scenes, and more. For fans of Michael Jackson, it was a must-see tourist attraction just off the expressway. A bit of Gary's history is gone, said Irvin G.I.T.V. Jackson of Gary, who captured some of the demolition on his cell phone Wednesday. It meant a lot to a lot of people. It gave the people of Gary hope that you can make it out of adversity, Jackson said. The other day I was filming a movie downtown and I wanted to do a scene, but it was gated off. And then I was coming up Broadway and I saw them tearing it down. So I took out my video camera to capture the last moments of this historical painting. I work downtown and today I rode past it. And there's just something missing. The whole wall is gone, Jackson said. The four-story Jackson 5 mural was commissioned by the city in 2016. Giselle Evans, 36, a former Gary resident who now lives in Wisconsin, said, while some may call it only a painting, the loss is deeper than that. At the end of the day, we want to see our city thrive and be stronger economically, but we also want our culture to live on so younger generations can see the foundation that was laid for them, Evans said. Evans, a female hip-hop artist whose stage name is J25, paying homage to her childhood home near 25th and Broadway, said she, like most people who hail from Gary, grew up listening to the Jackson Five. They played a major role in my life, and I wanted to do and with what I wanted to do in my life. They paved the way for a lot of musicians, she said. Evans said she first saw the mural in 2018. I had moved out of town to pursue a music career, and I came back home, and that's when I took a photo of me with the mural. And I was just so proud, she said. Mayor Jerome Prince on Thursday acknowledged the pain in losing a piece of art so connected to the city's downtown. It's always difficult to see bits of our history disappearing, especially work like the mural, which represents people who have made Gary proud. We have to make the tough calls to provide a safer, cleaner city for our residents. By eliminating blight in our city, we're really clearing the way for new opportunities for our community, Prince said. Ivo McIntosh, who lived in Gary from 1992 to 2019, said while he hates to see the mural gone, he understands the need to develop downtown. McIntosh said while he's optimistic for what's to come, he worries the current administration will be unable to stick to its promises. Through the last administration and before that, a lot of promises were made around election time, and those things never tend to develop. So I'm hoping this administration is different, he said. John Allen, a restaurant owner with numerous properties in Gary, said he has been inside 561 Broadway and that it was not worth saving. But he said he also welcomes Maldonado to paint on any property I have on Jackson Street, he said. Maldonado painted a similar but much smaller Jackson 5 mural on Lake Street in Gary's Miller Beach neighborhood as part of the Lake Effect art project. Maldonado was a runner-up for the Art House, a social kitchen project downtown in 2016. That got city officials more interested in his work, and they approached him about doing a mural downtown. Gary residents got a choice of three designs celebrating Gary's heritage and ended up choosing the Jackson Five. "We wanted to come up with something that would cast the city in a positive light," he said at the time. Prince, through a city spokesman, did not offer specifics for redevelopment plans on the site. However, he did say, "We have reached out to the Jackson family, and they're interested in helping develop part of Broadway. We also will reach out to Felix Maldonado to create a permanent tribute to the Jackson family." Next, two teens wounded in street shooting. From Decatur. Police on Sunday reported that two teenagers were shot and wounded Saturday evening when gunfire erupted on a Decatur street. One 15-year-old male was shot in the left foot, while another male, aged 17, sustained a wound that saw a bullet lodged in his right leg. The shootings happened around 7:30 p.m. as the two teenagers were on the front porch of a house in the 1600 block of North Maple Avenue when a man walked up and opened fire. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said the 15-year-old had not wanted to talk about it, but the 17-year-old described what happened. He said a gray car had driven by first, and then the man had appeared walking around the corner of West Division Street and North Maple Avenue. "He was seen to pull a dark object larger than a phone from his pocket," said Copeland. "They all believed it was a handgun, and so they took off running into the house and heard several gunshots. He," the 17-year-old, "said he realized he had been struck and fell off the porch." Copeland said officers searching the area later recovered seven spent .45 caliber shell casings from near the scene of the shooting. Investigations are continuing. And next, police say woman cited for urinating outside store. A 50-year-old Decatur woman was cited for a city ordinance violation when police said they found her urinating outside of a Decatur convenience store Friday evening. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said officers had been called to the Tobacco Shack, 343 West Grand Avenue, at 7:26 p.m. after complaints the same woman had been pouring out beers into the parking lot, Copeland said. Police saw her urinating, and as they approached, she stood up and began fastening her pants, Copeland added. The officers asked her what she was doing, and she said she was, vulgar term for urinating, Copeland said. She said the employees of the store told her she could use the bathroom. She was cited for urinating in public. And finally from Chicago, guard sues Cook County Sheriff. A former jail guard has filed a federal lawsuit against the Cook County Sheriff for allegedly dismissing her bid to become a courthouse deputy because she failed a fitness test. Denise Hobbs, 59, claimed the test is discriminatory based on age, sex, and race, and the sheriff has required it even after an administrative judge ruled otherwise, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. Hobbs twice failed the test in 2019. She said she was told to go back to work at the jail, but then retired soon after. She was among 25 people taking part in the training academy for courthouse deputies. Six were rejected, including Hobbs, and three other black women, one black man, and a white man, according to the lawsuit. And this will be the end of our first half-hour reading of the Decatur Herald in Review. I will take a short break now and then return with the second half-hour. I hope you stay tuned and join us for that second half-hour reading.